Talk Shoe. Recorded live.
Okay, so Talk Shoe is this online kind of free service that these guys that trying to build a podcasting business put up. And essentially what they're doing is just making conference calls over the internet. But you can hit a button and record it, and then that recording becomes a podcast other people can listen to. So that's all we're doing here. But so, Dave, did you just join?
I did. I just called in.
What's up? This is Dave Kellett.
How many people are in here?
I'm looking at 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 besides us.
Sounds good.
So we got Gordon McAlpin from Multiplex in here.
All right.
And then we have Eddie Pittman, who is a fantastic artist and part-time animator, I guess, in Florida. And then the guy, Alan, who runs the Daily Cartoonist, is here, calling from Utah. And then I think we have a couple webcomic guys just listening in. There's someone from New York listening. I can only assume it's somebody famous because they are in New York. Otherwise, why would they live there? They're being pretty quiet. But anyway, so look. The whole purpose of me suggesting this is that, first of all, text is a horrible way to communicate. There's no tone to your voice. There's no... personally, I hate it because sarcasm is much more difficult than text. And I love being sarcastic and snarky. It's easier in with your voice. But in today's day and age, it's a lot more common to meet people with making the quotation sign online and stuff without ever having met them. But I have friendships with a lot of other cartoonists. And some of them I've maybe met in person a handful of times, but some of us are best friends, and a couple of them I'd even call my brothers. And I can count on one hand the number of times I've seen them in person. So maybe if we all talk with voices instead of text, we can all get to know each other and learn a bit more from each other. But I kind of want to learn from anyone in here who is doing mostly print-based comics and cartooning, if they don't mind sharing, exactly how they're earning their living and how much of their living they're earning from cartooning. So I guess you're the go-to guy, Eddie.
Oh, I don't know. I'm not making a lot from print. I'll do some occasional illustrations, but storyboards and things right now have been my bread and butter. So I don't think I'm the one.
Well, I want you to keep in mind, and I was actually discussing this with my wife earlier today, that I think a lot of us on the web, and anyone else in here, and Dave, correct me if I'm wrong, but don't you feel like a lot of the people that are doing web comics are kind of, we're comic strip makers?
Yeah, and I think... There is absolutely nothing wrong and actually something to be promoted with the idea of multiple income streams. I mean, it's actually, we devote heavy number of pages in the book to talking about the fact that the future of cartooning is not relying on any one main income stream. So I'd like to make that clear that we're not in any way putting that up as like the must-have in terms of a career. It's just worth delineating because so many people hold up syndication as this grand money train, when in fact it's a grand money train for 0.1% of the cartoonists that attempt it, and everyone else is sort of left out of that big cash pile. Whereas with webcomics, there's sort of, and I think Howard Taylor had the best phrase for it, there's sort of this slow income curve, more like someone who goes to work every day and you are responsible and resultant of the income that you bring in. Whereas syndication is in some ways working for years and years and years to even get a lottery ticket that you might possibly win at. Webcomics is very much more the idea of it anyway, and this is true with a lot of freelancers and a lot of illustrators that I know. You are the ultimate determinant of your success.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, it's Ted Rawl here.
Hey, Ted.
Who's here? Who all's here?
Okay, Ted. So, sorry, Dave.
No,
it's all right. Just for the people that came in, I just want you to know that we are recording this for the people that aren't able to make it or listen. So
cool.
I just want you to know, anyone that's coming in ahead of time, we're recording it for a podcast. So we have Eddie. Well, I just went over this. Forgive me if I get your name wrong, because it's a lot of names for me to juggle, and I'm not very smart. Dave Kellett's in here. I'm in here. Scott Kurtz. I'm Scott Kurtz. Eddie Pittman's in here. Gordon McAlpin, who's a wonderful web cartoonist at a strip called Multiplex, is in here. Where's my talk show window? We have a lot of people that are listed as their cities. I think Chris Eliopoulos is in here. He's a letterer for comics. Is that you, Chris?
That's me.
Awesome. And then we have a couple webcomic guys, I think, that are just kind of sitting back and listening. But
Matt Borders, I'm back. I left for a second.
Oh, hey, Matt. What's going on?
Hey, Matt.
What's up?
And Ted's here, too.
Cool.
So,
sorry, Scott. Go ahead. I interrupted you with my when I burst in.
No, it's fine. Dave was what I was asking Dave, and he was commenting on it, was that I think a lot of people consider themselves kind of the web camp, we're all strippers. We're all comic strippers. We're not.
That's not a very pleasant thought, you know.
That's an old Mark Breathed gag.
Us print guys
mean
have to work
we,
as strippers, too.
We all draw naked. But no, I think most of us on the web have this kind of dream that being a cartoonist is synonymous with creating a strip and a set of characters and building a world and kind of replicating the comic strips that we grew up reading, as opposed to just doing any other kind of cartooning.
Yeah, following your muse.
Yeah. Well, even so much as just doing things that aren't comic strip or comic book related, like Eddie doing storyboard work or doing cartoon work for other media like video games or animation. I think everyone kind of online is, I'm gonna replace newspaper with the web and make that work. I just thought it was an interesting point to kind of.
I did want to chime in on something that I heard you say before when you said, you know, oh, the odds of being syndicated are like 0.1% or whatever. And, you know, I used to think that too, but with my job, I can sort of tell you that that's not really the case. I mean, your odds are a lot better than that. You know, we get, like at United, we get thousands and thousands of submissions, but would look at 99.5% of them and throw them immediately into the trash can. They're just completely a joke. You know, they're drawn by lunatics or people who have no basic competence in any, you know, there's nothing to look at. It's only the top, you know, a small fraction of 1% that really anyone would even consider to be a viable cartoonist. So your odds are a lot better than that. I think if you're a good cartoonist, you know, your odds are still less than 100%, but, you know, they're not as grim as you think. I mean, I think if you're good, you're probably, and you are devoted, you know, you're willing to make the tweaks that are necessary to be in syndication formatically, et cetera, you will get syndicated eventually.
But isn't the problem there that isn't the odds of getting in? The problem is the amount of jobs that are available in syndication.
Well, I mean, that's the other issue. It's like only one out of two launches really survives a year. And then beyond that point, it's, as we all know, the newspaper industry is contracting, the economy, advertising vanishing, so client lists are shrinking, and so, you know, there's a huge problem. But I guess the point I was trying to make, you know, in the threads that precipitated this call, is that cartooning is in trouble, and that webcomics are not going to solve the underlying problem. because the revenue streams that are available, even in the future from webcomics, are not big enough to replace the disappearing income stream overall as a pot. You know,
really? Do this for me, Ted, real quick. Let me back up just a second. The two things I need you to do, first of all, remind me and everybody else, what is it that you do for United Media?
Oh, hey, guys.
Hello? Hello?
Hi, this is Rich. I just got here.
Hey, Rich.
Okay.
So,
Rich, we're recording this, just for your own benefit of knowing. We are recording this.
Okay, I'll try not to fart.
Okay.
Yeah, you'll have to listen to all my Manhattan crowd noise in the background, though. I'm editor of acquisitions and development at United Media.
Okay.
I'm a cartoonist.
All right, okay. So the second thing I want you to do is, I think...
And the only guy who's ever written a book about webcomics that has become by a mainstream publisher.
And what book is that?
Attitude 3.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I mean, I love the form. I mean, you know, tell you the truth, webcomics are where I look first for new talent, for sure. No question. I mean, it's the most exciting stuff around, period. And, I tell that to everybody. I still think that's the case. I think, you know, anyone these days would be out of their minds to ignore the web. So that's not what I'm saying. My problem is that I feel like we have an economic issue that people aren't addressing because so many web comics people are young enough to not be terribly concerned about what's going to happen when they're 50. But I don't know about you guys, but I want to retire from this job. You know, I don't want to go back and work for an investment bank again. And I don't think you guys want to go work for the man either. So if we're all, you know, we all are all cartoonists, we all work either in combination varying from 0 to 100 to 100 to 0 of print/web, and we've all got to figure out a way to make more money. The problem is that advertising rates for the web are crappy, and print advertising rates were really great by comparison. And since the future is web, I mean, look at, for instance, I mean, if you compare, for instance, the circulation of a newspaper and what they could charge for a certain space in advertising compared to what an equivalently viewed website gets, it's a factor of like 1 to 200.
But isn't the cost?
Go ahead, somebody.
I was just going to say, isn't the cost of printing a newspaper 200 times as much too? I don't know if that's really hold an argument on.
Well, it's true that newspapers are obviously multi-million-dollar, $100 million operations for sure. But I don't see really what the point though is. That think about all the people that a newspaper keeps employed. I mean, even a small newspaper employs thousands of people, or at least many hundreds of people. And think of money, with those ad rates. And a cartoonist back in the day, working for a paper today can really reasonably expect anywhere from $50,000 as the lowest possible salary, up to $500,000 a year, and $150,000, $200,000, $250,000, not unusual at all. And syndicated comic strip cartoonists who are in, say, 200 papers, probably going to be making $250,000 or more, plus licensing. Those are the realities. And
well, see, Ted, I got to tell you, it excites me to hear that because I have to let you know that that is not the word that I'm hearing coming from the cartoonists that I met and know that are syndicated. Michael Jantz, who does The Norm, broke my heart a couple years ago when he told me he was quitting the strip, and when I asked him why, he said I didn't reach my money benchmark with it. I'm going to make more money doing animation in California and doing storyboards and stuff, and so that's what I'm going to go do. And it really broke my heart because, for me, it's like, well, oh my God, you're doing what we all wish that we could be doing, and you're going to quit because you're not making as much as you could somewhere else? I mean, but...
Yeah, well, at United, we discontinue strips all the time that have lost their lift and are not performing well enough to justify them continuing for the creator. That happens, you know, no question. But what I'm talking about is broad generalities, averages. You know, I mean, there's going to be web cartoonists who do very, very well. There's going to be syndicated cartoonists who make nothing, who don't get a single sale. But on average, for the most cartoonists, on average, the print model's better. But it doesn't matter because it's not going to come back. You know what I mean? Like, we're talking about something that's academic. The real question is, we know that the web is going to continue to expand, mostly at the expense of print. We know print will continue, but in some, you know, at least for the time being, reduced format. And so what we have to figure out, I think, is we have to first all agree that there's a problem, and I don't think people understand. I don't think we agree on that. So,
aren't graphic novel sales in this country going up every year? I mean, like, it's like something like a $800 million business. Last year.
Yeah, it's a booming business for sure.
Yeah, but how much of that is manga?
200 million.
So the real question is how many cartoonists are making how much money each from those books. It's finally getting to the point where graphic novels are actually paying respectable advances, but that's really only started like a year or two ago. You know, I mean,
We got a real big problem here, and the big problem is we're not defining terms correctly. Because when you say cartoonist, you got eight different people who do eight different things, thinking that you're talking about them. So what I really need now is for Ted to define for us what he means by cartooning is in trouble. Because I think our biggest problem right here is that when I say I'm a cartoonist, I think of myself as someone who makes a comic strip. When Rick Stromowski says he's a cartoonist, he thinks that he's talking about maybe a person who sells spot cartoons and illustrations to publications and magazines, and, you know, Eddie might think it's a storyboard artist. So we're all talking about different things and calling it cartoonist, and I think we're all getting offended and we don't need to. So, Ted,
that's a very good point.
Yeah. So,
personally, I think anyone who works in, you know, words and pictures is a cartoonist. You know, I think that the issue is that the vast majority of webcomics people are doing comic strips that really could, at least formatically, appear in newspapers or magazines if they were cooler than they are, right? I mean, there's some people who are
working
in formats that are absolutely straight, that it absolutely would not work in print, but it's not. There's no intrinsic reason that most of the stuff couldn't be in print, right?
Well, content reason, though. I mean, there's any number of classic cartoonists, not even just in webcomics. Like, you know, Robert Crumb, could you ever print that in a newspaper? Alternative newspapers. You know, the independents, like the Chicago Reader or something like that, but not, you know, the Tribune.
The New Yorker prints Robert Crumb.
You do have to include alternatives. I mean, you know, Dan Perkins makes his entire income on alternatives.
Who?
Tom Tomorrow.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, he's in 100 alt weeklies. Believe me, he's making excellent money. It's not. I think that the issue is, you know, things that make, I think, a lot of print people nervous is when we hear web cartoonists undervaluing their own product. You know, for instance, Scott, you posted something today on the Daily Cartoonist thread where you said you would give away an illo to Wired so that people would click through to your URL. And I'm like, you should get paid for that.
Yes.
No, I agree, but the thing is, Ted, I think a lot of it is that I'm going to speak for myself here. I'm trying to speak for everyone else, but this is why I think it's so valuable for us to sit and talk and learn from each other, is I think that a lot of us that either started on the web or started making our money on the web, we can't believe that anybody would give a shit to pay us for that stuff. And
I
so
just it's, rather,
it
I would
never,
just rather collect money in my PayPal account.
It Well, look, I, really?
Scott, if I can chime in, though, too, there's also a mindset amongst web cartoonists, and this is Dave, by the way, that let's say Wired would pay anywhere from, depending on the size, $500 to $5,000 for that strip, right?
Okay.
A lot of us would look at that as subsidized advertising. How much would I pay for an ad buy in Wired? You know what I mean?
Right.
So for my business model,
right.
For my business model, it doesn't matter to me if I give it away for free. The money is not made by print sales. And yes, I do sell them to magazines and textbooks and books all the time. But depending on the type of public periodical or publication, I will consider that as a form of subsidized advertising. And no accountant would disagree with that as a business move.
But
this is Eddie. I want to make a point here because I'm observing something that's interesting. Scott and Dave, when I hear you guys talk, I'm hearing entrepreneurs talk. I'm hearing businessmen talk, and which isn't to downplay your role as artist. But it's a lot different than when I hear, say, just an illustrator talk about not wanting to give his work away, wanting to only sell his work or make some money off his work. So it's really interesting because I see you guys exploring, weighing. And I hear you guys talk about this on your podcast all the time, but you're weighing the benefits. You know, is it more important to take that money for publishing that strip or to get the exposure? And sure, you might be able to do both, but I see you guys weighing those opportunities more and looking down the road more rather than for just the immediate payoff.
That's the simplistic difference. If I can follow up on that thought, that's the simplistic difference, I think, between the free content model is that we don't just look at it that every time I put pen to paper, I'm going to get paid. I am going to get paid every time I put pen to paper, but it's not in a traditional way that someone out of a syndicate or a print or an on-staff model would understand. And it confuses and scares older guys or guys that don't come from that model because they can't understand why I would walk away from $5,000 as a form of subsidized ad buy to a magazine, you know.
Can I jump in on that?
I don't understand why you would not get paid. Why would you leave money?
Hold on, guys.
But an art editor is willing to pay you.
Guys. Hold on a second. We got a lot of people who want to talk, and I hear you guys may not all hear it, but because I'm running it, I'm hearing a small voice that's been really trying to chime in. Who is that?
Matt Moores. I've been wanting to talk.
Okay, go ahead. Matt, what did you want to say?
Well, this is Rick. Can I follow up after him?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, somebody just talked about older guys getting scared or people that are from syndicates. I mean, I'm 24, and what you're talking about with giving away free what you consider advertising would, you know, as someone who gets paid from a syndicate, from a web source, of a different comic and through freelance illustration and other cartooning projects I do and graphic novels, that really, I see that as like kind of undermining cartooning in a way. I mean, if you're viewing your comic strip in on your own website, of course I would expect you to put it up there for free, but in a for-profit magazine, to put it in there for free to view it as advertising, the next step is for them to charge you for advertising.
Let me put that in context. I have never done it, but I'm saying I can understand the mindset of why someone would do that from a web model.
I'll tell you why.
Well, and to
make perfectly clear, last year there was about $8,000 or $10,000 worth of book, magazine, and textbook sales for me from having given it away for free on the site. Someone saw it. They said, hey, this would be great in my textbook. Can I pay you $800? Sure. Thanks very much. Put the URL in there as well. But I'm saying, can you understand the mindset of why someone would be willing, like Scott put on that post and Ted was appalled, but why someone from a web model would do that? I mean, it's understandable to me. It's because it's a completely different business model. People can't wrap their heads around that.
Well, I sell things through my website as well, and I try to sell, you know, my strips to magazines and newspapers, and when they put it in, just like almost everybody's comic, because everybody has a website, you know, my URL's on the copyright line, and I want people to come to my website through it, but I want, we should all get paid for usage. I mean, a writer that's getting paid to write a feature is not going to just put their URL and say, well, I want them to come to my website to buy the other things that I offer. I mean, I understand you're being entrepreneurs, but if you're offering something to a for-profit magazine that's selling, you know, $35,000 ads right next to their content. We should all be getting paid for that.
Well, listen, I want to make sure everyone that wanted to had a chance to say something, but don't let me misspeak. What I was positing was that I could see someone doing it. And let me give you a personal example. I was approached by a video game company and Seasoft to do because I had done some strips on a video game that they did called City of Heroes. And they were making millions and millions of dollars off this game. And they wanted to print those comics as a comic book that would appear in their boxes. So when you open the box and bought the game, there was a mini comic of my comics. And I had researched previously how much it would cost to put a postcard in one of those games to advertise my comic. And it was hundreds of thousands of dollars. So here was an opportunity not just to get a postcard, but a whole comic book in there for free, and I jumped on it. And then months later, when I first met Penny Arcade's business manager, he asked me coyly, how much did I get paid for that? And I said, oh, I didn't pay them anything. And he goes, no, how much did they pay you? And I said, well, nothing. They did it for free. And he goes, And I said, why? Should they have paid me? And he goes, oh, they would have paid me. And I said, well, how much should I have gotten paid? And he goes, I don't know, like 60 grand. And I played it off cool at dinner, but I'm not embarrassed to tell you that on the cab ride back to the hotel, in the back of the cab with my wife, I wept. I started to weep. I felt like I had failed my entire family and left 60 grand on the table. And the sad thing, the thing that kicked my ass the most, is that if he had told me that before I made the deal, I wouldn't have fucking known how to get the 60 grand out of him.
Yeah, but Koo's amazing. You can't hold yourself responsible for what Koo can accomplish.
No, but what I'm saying is Koo's just a business guy.
I want to marry him.
What I'm saying is that I would not have known how to get 10 grand out of him, 20 grand out of him. But I think some education in that matter could have helped me more. So what I'm saying is that it's not that we're willing to leave money on the table. I just don't think that...
Well, you have to be aware that the money is there.
Scott,
yes,
There's no secret. All you have to do is ask. The worst thing that can happen is that they'll say no. That's
right.
It. That's all I do. I just ask. I'll say, how much are you paying? And then, you know, we get into that conversation. I mean, for me, I don't have that discussion without, I'm never involved in doing any work until the subject of money has been completely settled.
I think another point to make is, Ted and I, he's my editor at United, but he's also my competitor because we're competing for the slot in all weeklies. And now if he calls the Village Voice and they drop Ted and they put me in his place. If Ted calls the Voice and says, you can have me for free and dump Boars, that's like, you know, a shitty move to do. I mean, that hurts everyone in the long run.
It depends on, well.
But let's, if I can suggest, let's not hang up too much on us offering stuff for free to print, because thus far, as far as I'm aware, it hasn't happened. I think what's the bigger paradigm shift that scares the living hell out of people is that we do offer stuff for free online, and what that means for people that truly that understood how to work under a print system.
No, that's really not true. I mean, all cartoonists give their work away online.
Everyone has their own website where they're displaying their stuff for free. I mean, I have that.
Wait, all the stuff up for free. Every syndicate, right?
Here's where the breakdown happens, though, is that Ted, in the beginning of his post, was positing that everyone in syndication always made 8 figures in syndication, and that no one in the web world could make a living. We presented him with at least 24 people that I know that make as much, if not more, than I do. And Ted continues to believe that, and continues to believe that the majority of people that have been syndicated in the last 5 to 8 years are making 8 figures, and that's simply a mistake. Most of the guys that I talk to can't even make a living in their syndication income.
I think that anything other than a handful of people are making eight figures, just for the record, or seven figures for that matter.
Exactly.
But,
well,
wait a minute.
Are they on a fucking secret island hiding from us? I mean, it's not like we don't make the rounds.
Wait, what?
Go
to NCS, man. Go hang out at NCS. It's in New Orleans this year. Those people are all insanely wealthy. A lot of them are old and have been doing it for years, but
yeah.
A lot of them have not been doing it
some
for
are,
years.
Some of
you
them are not invited, Ted.
I want to point out that I'll be in New Orleans this year, and I am so far away from being extremely wealthy. So.
And that's the argument that I want to get to, is that Ted is pointing to people that started in the 60s and 70s when there's no argument among anybody here that syndication was a huge cash cow. No one's going to argue that Mort Walker is not making shit tons of money even late in his career. No one's arguing that the Charles Schulz estate is still making shit tons of money. But I want you to tell me that Baldo is making shit tons of money, or Callan Boy is making shit tons of money.
And you have
I can
to
tell
define.
You Baldo is not making shit tons of money because the guy works a day job here in Dallas.
Okay, so, I mean, I think it's such an absurd question. It's like having to prove that the sky is blue.
No, it's not an absurd question, Ted. It's not an absurd question.
It is absurd. There are cartoonists who are in 400 papers, okay? They make a buttload of money, and they started since 2001. You can look them up. I don't want to bring them up here.
Name one.
God damn it, Ted. Why?
You guys use the internet? You're into that.
Wait a minute. I'm coming a little bit late here. I'm going to have to introduce myself. My name is Brad Geiger. I am one of the co-authors of the How to Make Web Comics book, just so so you're not hearing this voice in the wilderness.
Such a horrible plug, Brad. I can't believe you plugged
it. Well, no, it was a plug.
He has to plug.
But anyway, here's the deal. What Dave and Scott are saying is absolutely right. There are very, very few people that have gotten syndicated since 2000 that are making a full-time living, and we know this because we talk to a lot of these guys.
But maybe the guys who are making big bucks aren't talking to you. But the fact still remains that they exist. And the overall question is what is the future like for all of us who draw pictures, whether they appear in which...
The future is on the web.
The future, okay, and that future is currently looking very frightening, and it should be. You guys should be far more frightened than me because you're younger. I only have to go.
Here's the deal.
Years.
Here's
Ted,
what you're asking me to do, Ted. You're asking me to go back to the days when I was furtively sending off a syndicate submission, hoping that I was going to be out of the 2,000, one of the two that was chosen.
What I'm asking us is for us to all first accept that there's a problem with money. And
how we can charge more
money online.
Ted, I have to apologize because I came into this conversation a little bit late. Are we still hashing that whole giving away for free thing over? Because I got to tell you.
We all give it away for free.
No, we don't. I don't give it away for free on my site. I run advertising. I have sponsorships, and I merchandise the heck out of my property.
What do you think every syndicated cartoonist does? They all have advertising. They have merchandise. They all do the same thing.
So what are we arguing about? You're doing it your way, and I'm doing it my way.
You're actually not different. The problem is
gentlemen, please.
The ad rates are too low.
Guys, I'd
like to make a point if anybody, yeah.
Sure.
Let me moderate this a bit. Let me moderate just a second, because I want everyone to get their point across. We've got plenty of time.
I think there's a good way to stop the fight, too.
Okay.
The worst thing that happens is everyone talks over themselves. So let me catch up, Brad, just real fast. I think Ted is more on the side of us than you might realize. He's not worried about us giving away strips for free online. No one is. But I'm starting I think to glean a little more. I think this really comes down to a bad defining of terms, and everyone assuming that one term is applying to 10,000 things that they don't. So let's all give everyone a chance to talk here. So Matt Boers, are you trying to say something real quick?
Yeah. Somebody said earlier that, you know, people are trying to say that artists shouldn't give their strips away for free online, and no one's saying that. Everyone everyone has their own website, everyone. And they want people to go there because they sell something. And but I think here is the problem as I see it. Anyone who gets people to come to their site, you know, PvP, Penny Arcade, or whatever sells advertising, book collections, or whatever they sell, and makes money from that, that's like an amazing success story. What people like me are worried about, and maybe this is coming from a different perspective, is like not everybody can do that. Like, I mostly am known for drawing editorial cartoons, but clients online don't pay. They don't want to pay because they have a view that everything's free. So, for instance, even ones that pay, like Yahoo, they pay very little. So if Yahoo has, you know, however many eyeballs on there, they're paying a percentage of what a paper would pay if they had that many eyeballs. And we worry about people giving away content for free online to sites that have billions, like, for instance, the Huffington Post. You know, there's people who post their content, post cartoons, post content that are doing that for free, and they're not getting paid. And people who, like me, who have been getting paid for, well, not forever, because I've only been doing it for a few years, but, you know, getting paid from papers, now see that the future is that everything is free and exposure is the payment. So big news blogs, big news sites, they're going to start asking people like me to run my syndicated cartoons 3 times a week on their site for free. And that's it. That, you know, print revenues are declining and web revenues are, you know, basically going to be zero.
And I think it's, I think what everyone has to realize on the website, okay, and maybe it's easier for me to understand it because I just turned 37, so I'm staring 40 in the face. And it's not like I'm looking at 40 and going, oh, no, it's time to get a cane. But 50 seems a whole lot closer than it did when I was 20. and the bottom line is I'm losing touch with the kids now. What the fuck is going to happen when I'm 50? What are my pop culture references going to be?
You'll be
Star Wars
at that point.
Who's going to fucking remember Star Wars when I'm 50? All right, so the point is, my fear is that if everyone in the web looks at everyone in print and assigns them a face of some old guy that doesn't realize his business model is dead, and we all want to call them nothing but horse buggy whip salesmen that are just pissed at the automobile. And all we're going to do is consign ourselves to waking up very soon, sooner than you think, and realizing, oh, fuck, now we're the dinosaurs. So it's not going to hurt anybody for us all to figure out the best ways to make money from cartooning. However, I don't give a shit who wins print versus web. I just care where the money is. Because I want to make it.
Right.
You know, exactly.
That's what,
like,
that's,
if you guys want to discuss the merits of web versus print, let's discuss it on my fucking yacht after I'm a millionaire with mimosas.
Okay.
I'm but, there. It doesn't matter. Yeah, that doesn't matter. I mean, that's not the discussion. You know, and I think it's not partly, obviously a lot of this is my fault. Because I keep saying, you know, if I ruled the world, blah, blah, blah. Well, I don't. I'm not going to. I thought that was self-evident. And, you know, sadly and tragically, it's for the world. But,
I'm politically incorrect, Ted. I think you might be close to ruling the world.
Thank you. Thank you. Only in my own mind, I think. But it's but the point is that, look, we know it's not going to change. So the question, you know, you guys have nothing to worry about. I agree. You're not the future, but you're a big part of it. So the question is, really, now, can we please get you guys to charge more for comics when you can get more for comics? I mean, you guys should, you know, I feel like the movie Idiocracy. I like money. You like money. Let's hang out.
Well,
hey, Ted, I have a question.
Oh.
Ted, this is Eddie. I have a question for you that goes along with that. I've heard quite often from, and I don't know where the sources are coming from, that the rates that the syndicates charge to newspapers have not gone up since the 70s. Is there any validity to that?
Yeah, there is. The rates have been frozen in time, really, since the 40s and 50s. They have not been adjusted for inflation at all. It's a total buyer's market. Anyone who tells you otherwise would be an idiot.
Okay, well, and then in that case, because, you know, in some respects, and I mean this with all due respect, that the syndicates are giving their comics away because they know the money is going to come in from different avenues. You know, they're not charging
not
as
really
much
like
as...
That. We're really going for a... Syndicates view themselves as a bulk business.
Okay.
They sell a lot of things, and so they get a little bit from a lot of things. That's really their business model.
But
go ahead, continue.
No, but I was just going to say, because that sounds very similar to the kind of business model, although they're, you know, the Half Pixel guys have the same kind of business model going, where they're selling different things. You know, Scott's got the Image comic, and he's got his, you know, he's got the Web Comics book now, and he's got his own compilations, T-shirts and stuff like that. So he's, even though he's giving it, letting people read the strip for free, I really am not seeing the difference of the income, except that it's in a different place. You know, it's on the web, and the comic strip is in the newspaper.
I think I could...
go ahead.
Oh, just like, okay, again, it's, you know, no one cares if you're reading your strip on your website, but I think where there would be a problem is somebody coming from a print and someone coming from a web background. If Yahoo says, we want to run your strip every day, maybe Scott would say, sweet, put a hyperlink underneath it, and then he's good to go. That, you know, if that happened to me and they said, well, we get our cartoons for free, we run PvP and we run all these other things, and the payment is a link, I would... You know,
yeah.
That wouldn't work for me.
Can I make a point?
You know, the thing is that just, what do you guys, you know, you webcomic people, what do you think about things like that? I mean, do you think that it's acceptable for an outlet like, you know, Yahoo or a commercial website to run your stuff for free? Or, I mean, they should be paying, and I think that the rates are going down and down and down.
Well,
you know,
if I could answer that, and I don't know if someone else wanted to chime in after me. For me, the bottom line is I wouldn't give it to any other site, period. I mean, I know there are strips that do syndicate to other sites, but for me, the idea is to build the brand centered around the site from which they can dive into the strip, which generates advertising income for me, read my blog, which generates convention appearances and sales and book signings and gallery signings for me, and buy books and stuff through the site, which in turn gives me a much higher revenue stream than any distribution or fulfillment model that traditionally exists. So for me, the idea is very much to keep everybody on my site, and other people could chime in on that with their thoughts.
Yeah, actually, can I jump in for a change?
Yes, go ahead.
You know why we are happy to get the exposure is because we're thinking more in terms of you can sell what you have and you can keep people coming back and keep getting paid later over and over again because you use the exposure to build a loyal core audience. That's why we're willing to do this, and I think that's what people aren't quite getting. It's not about, you know, getting a lot of clicks. It's about T-shirt I will sell in 5 years, you know, as opposed to getting paid once.
And again over 5 years.
Right, because if I can get 1 million people to come visit and I can keep 10,000 really strong fans, that's so much more valuable than a couple $1,000 check. That's I think, why we do that. And it's just a different mindset, that's all.
Well, and I think that if everybody was doing the same thing, that no one would have a problem with it. The problem is that there are cartoonists whose whole lives their whole income is based on making that one sale. And then
right, and that's why I think we shouldn't focus so much on the sale to print, because I've rarely, if ever, heard of that happening, where someone's given it away for free.
I think, Dave, I don't think it's happening a whole lot, but I don't think it's because it's any moral imperative on the part of web cartoonists. I think it's opportunity.
But I guess my question is that the core argument here? Because if that's the core argument, then we can settle it pretty quickly. I think ethically we'd all agree that to save the remaining print guys whose sole income or core income is in print, ethically, we should all agree that probably is a practice that should never continue or be allowed to exist. So that's
Do you want to save them?
Well, Rich, I'm just saying I there's an empathy on my part for the 60-year-old guy who's worked his whole life in a print model and is still getting by on his syndication money, and there's no way I'm going to undercut him or his retirement.
Okay, but I gotta say something.
That same guy isn't gonna help me. I mean, you gotta keep that in mind. I don't know if we have any ethical responsibility to one another in that regard.
I got some news for you, pal. There is no us and them. That them is gonna be you, because when the next thing comes out, whatever the fuck it is after the web, people are putting cartoons on their asshole and blowing confetti out of it, and you don't know how to get your cartoon on asshole confetti, then you're fucked.
Right. I think the issue here is not about, look, Rich, it's not like, I agree with you. There's no, you know, like, I don't think the old farts here.
To draw on those assholes.
The old farts here are not looking to be kept in a game preserve for tourists.
Right, and they're doing wonderfully.
No, we're not worried about that. The issue is we want to gouge anyone who's willing to pay as much as possible. This is something that every cartoonist should do. If you get offered a gig from Wired, as an example, it's like, and you can get a lot of money, and they'll run your URL, and you get a bunch of hits, and you sell a bunch of merch. That's better for you, and it's better for me the next time Wired calls me. And that's
well,
what we want you to do.
Well, and also, you know, I don't know if it was Rich or whoever, but, you know, everyone that makes money from print isn't 60 years old. I'm 24, and that's where most of my income comes from. And Wired, the example we've been using, isn't marketed towards senior citizens. I mean, people still read magazines and newspapers. They're always going to, even though they're going to go down. And there's always going to be comics running them. And all weeklies, which aren't charged, you know, are based on ad revenue. And those rates aren't going up anytime in the future.
Well,
but they,
it has nothing to do with age.
That's why I'm telling you guys that we are arguing the same side. We just have been shitty at making definitions because most web cartoonists say don't give your stuff away for free, and they don't realize what you're speaking about. They think they need their web.
No, the print guys are not. No print guy thinks that a web cartoonist should not give his or her work away.
It's impossible not to on your own website.
Yeah, we all give our stuff. There is no cartoon, maybe, I don't know, one, two, that can charge for the cartoon itself. Everybody gives it away for free. Gary Trudeau, Jim Davis, everyone.
So stop right there for a second, Ted.
They're all web cartoonists. They're no different than you guys. They use their websites to sell merchandise. Go ahead.
Right. I just want to point out that I think for a lot of web cartoonists, the fact that your can't believe that is news to them. Because up until this point, we all thought that you didn't like that our comic strips were online for free. And I thought,
why would we not like that when we're all doing the same thing?
Okay, so what's the core problem then? Let's go back to that.
Well, one of the things I was talking about, which isn't, you know, it's something that's not going to be a problem probably for, you know, maybe a lot of you guys that are making your money from your own websites, but just like, you know, people, like in me and Ted's circle, you know, we have this group called Cartoonists with Attitude, which is mostly the political cartoonists from the Attitude books that Ted made. And, you know, we know that print revenue is declining and stuff like that, but it's not being replaced online, not with people's websites who are running them for free, but with commercial websites, they don't value content. They don't pay for content. They view it as it's on the web, and therefore it should be free.
The thing is, some sites do, and that's what I care about. I don't care about all the, like, any website that doesn't want to pay me to run my comics or any, you know, magazine that wants to run my comics but doesn't want to pay me, ignore them. I don't care. I want to know how I can make money from doing comics. Because nobody's really going
to
make money. You don't make money from the comics themselves. You make money by selling original art. You make money by selling advertising on a website that has them for free on the internet. You make money from selling a book, which is a reprint of your comic, not the actual comic itself. So, I mean, I just...
Well, I guess I would say I understand what you're saying. You know, it doesn't work that way for everybody, though. Like, for instance, editorial cartoonists, which obviously everyone knows is, you know, a rapidly dying profession, it's not going to be replaced online because it's, you know, different. It's going to be harder for people to, you know, support it online because it's, you know, it's not as widely appealing as a daily cartoon strip. It's not as conducive to merchandise or collected books because it's so timely. I mean, it's a whole different thing, and that business model doesn't work for everyone. And
Matt, I was going to say, though, that I actually I agree 100% with the spirit of what you're saying. I just want to clarify, though, that I actually think that from a viral nature, editorial cartoons are much more powerful than any individual strip on a on an immediacy basis and on an emotional basis, but there is no argument that editorial strips are impossibly hard to monetize online because you're giving, for the most part, information that people don't want to hear, whereas we're giving information that entertains people purely, you know?
And that's why, to monetize it, people like me rely, like, for instance, I have a gig now with the ACLU. They're paying me to create a strip, which is, like, amazing. You know, it's they're paying me to create it for online, by the way. I mean, it's great. But, you know, not as many of those outlets exist. Like, an infinitesimal amount of those kind of jobs exist now that existed in print where they, you know, people pay you to run or create strips for them entirely. And so that's what it's about. That's what the worries are about. It's not about giving and strip away on your own site. It's about
the value. Though, is the real point is if you're not making enough money selling your strip to the ACLU or whatever, where else can you get money from? Because you're going to have an awful lot left in your day, of time left in your day to work on other comics. You know?
Yeah.
So you make a little bit here, a little bit here, a little bit there.
I probably draw about 7 comics a week, so that's what I'm doing right now.
Matt, if I could speak for a second, because I want to answer that question of where basically the question is, who is going to pay me? Where can I find money to get paid to do this? And this is going to sound cold-hearted from me, but I think the sad truth of it is, and the very nature of this paradigm shift is that, in general, people have acculturated to not paying anything online. We can all agree with that. And there's no necessary one to blame, per se, on that one. It's a cultural movement, not necessarily a supply-side problem. But the
people who are responsible for this in the first place were newspapers when they started giving away content online for free.
It's not a supply-side problem. The problem is multiplied 10 million times by every free blogger, every musician, every literary person that puts something up on the site. It's not necessarily a newspaper's problem. But it's not a supply-side problem. It's a demand-side problem, and we can't fix the demand-side problem. It's akin to a drug influx. But here's what I want to say is the very nature of this paradigm shift is that no one is going to pay you, and that's where the disagreement lies, I think. There is no person, for the most part, that is going to say, Matt, here's a check for you.
No, you're right. I have a foot in the print world I get money from. I have a foot in the web world. I have 3 feet, apparently, and one of them's in the graphic novel world. You know, I'm doing that, and I don't see really the prospects for print or web making me enough to make a living in the future. I mean, graphic novels, you know, are growing, but the web's growing, but the revenue for people like me is not at all.
Right. It's kind of like it's not unlike the end of the 19th century when all the poetry journals started to disappear and all the poets were like, well, wait a minute, where am I going to make my paid check? The problem is poets don't make a living anymore, and I think the sad truth is that's going to happen to a lot of genres and styles of cartooning unless someone monetizes it on their own.
Well, I think it's one of those things that I think if we finally figure out a way to do that, the person that does it not only is going to be rich, but he's going to be rich when he syndicates that idea, because these are the same issues that are being grappled with people in the music industry right now. You know, musicians are saying the exact same thing. They're dealing with the same stuff that we're dealing with. And I think the answer is going to have to be by thinking outside of the box and taking a look at some of these different ways of doing it.
I'm getting a lot of sack from somebody. I don't know who that is.
Yeah, who's the wrestler with the bear?
That's, I'm afraid that's me. I'm in a windstorm here in Manhattan.
Okay.
On mute.
Always. No. Well, before you put yourself on mute, Ted, I think we're kind of coming back to your original point. I would hate for you to miss an opportunity to make it, but you were discussing how at the beginning how cartooning is kind of in danger. And I mean, I understand Matt's plight as an editorial cartoonist, but I'm not sure what it is I can do to fix that as a web cartoonist. I mean, as just a piece for.
I want you to fix it. I want you to make it better.
Okay.
You two guys, like, right behind the code monkey to fix it? I think one of the little things we can do, and it's not going to be nearly enough, I think it's the mindset that, like, whenever possible, we should charge whatever the market will bear. Now, I understand that for online, there's that what the market will bear is zero. But, like, for instance, you know, Scott told his heartbreaking story about the 60,000 at the beginning of this call. And I have to admit, I mean, I would have cried too. And, you know, it's like a story that comes from a mindset. Like, you know, you're so used to not giving, you know, and I used to be like this too when I started out. You know, print cartoonists all started out giving their stuff away for free for exposure in print to small publications. So we all get it. The question is, but at a certain point, once you get to be popular, and once you have the opportunity to get money from someone who pays, not on your website, but, you know, for instance, a video game company that wants to put your comic in its packaging, et cetera, before you make a move, you should just ask yourself, can I charge for this?
Well, and I just want you to know that for the most part, all of you guys, I don't think that that is not happening right now, but I don't think that it's because
it's relevant.
Like I said, I don't think there's a moral imperative from web cartoonists, but I just think the opportunity hasn't popped up for a lot of people yet. It's popping up for some of us. I know it's popped up for me, especially recently. I was asked by a website to create a new comic strip specifically about a certain video game, and I didn't want to do it because I didn't think I'd have the time. So rather than just say no, I just kept making ridiculous demands on payment and ownership, and now I'm stuck drawing this thing 2 days a week because the money's too good and I get to retain ownership of it, and all I had to do was demand it. So, but at the same token, a local news station did a story on Chris and I about making comics on the web, and they want to put my comic strip on the website of their TV station, and that's never going to happen because I guarantee you once I tell Tribune Media that they have to pay me and I get to retain ownership, they're going to say, see you later.
I think Eric had said something that when he hears Scott and I talk, we sound like entrepreneurs. And I think that's my fundamental message to cartoonists is that you damn well better wake up and become entrepreneurs because the world does not owe you a living and the web has changed fundamentally the nature of our business.
Don't work for free except for yourself. And even that one's kind of pushing it. Make sure you pay yourself in some fashion.
You know what? I think seriously, like for a lot of print guys, we just like chuckle just hilariously at that statement because you know I'm the old man here. I'm 44 years old, but I can tell you we're all businessmen. If we weren't, we wouldn't be where we are. There's no other way to do this thing. You know. You'll see. It's just like
Ted, as a businessman. Then, do you represent? Do you understand the opportunity that there are people? I can name a half a dozen on the web making a half a dozen a year, and then I can probably name one, if not three, that are making multiple millions online with their web comics. You at least acknowledge that as a businessman, then.
I actually do not believe it, and I'll tell you why I don't believe it. I don't know how they're making their money, but it's not from purely merchandising.
So you're saying that
it's got to be doing something else. What is it?
You're saying as a businessman, then, you don't understand how they're making their money. That's fair.
As a former investment banker, I don't see, based on the ad rates as they exist, how it's possible comic strip to charge enough money to make a site like that profitable.
Let me ask you this then, because I want to follow up. Do you understand how Charles Schulz makes hundreds of millions of dollars a year?
Well, he made about $38 million a year. But yeah.
But in the prime of his years, when he was doing the MetLife contracts, when he had the licensing in Japan and the U.S., do you understand how he made those millions? So you can't extend that business model to Penny Arcade, for example, and understand how they probably made at least $10 million last year.
But that's not the same as making money from your comic.
Of course, but the business of Charles Schulz licensing to MetLife was not of the comic strip, but it was built on the comic strip. Can we at least acknowledge that?
Can I say something real quick? We're all businessmen now. Ted, to help this conversation along, is Ted, are you maybe suggesting that they're making money from things like T-shirts that aren't related to their comics or something like that,
Or I'm more suggesting, like, you know, like in one of the threads, someone said that, I forget who it was, people who sponsor conventions and stuff like that. It's like, okay, that's a business, and it's great, and it's fantastic, but that's like saying that, like, when I do a speaking gig, that's part of my comic business. It's not.
So
you know,
once again, it comes back to this fucking Rosetta Stone of definitions that we're all getting hung up on.
I think Ted defeats businessmen.
And so, Ted, what Ted is saying is that it's not that he can't acknowledge that Penny Arcade as a company is making millions of dollars a year, but they're not making millions of dollars. It's not Mike and Jerry making millions of dollars a year just by selling cartoons.
My concern is that it's not a business model that can be replicated on a large enough scale to be meaningful to cartooning as a profession. That's what I'm saying.
Well, Ted, I think that that's fair, but I think that if I'm going to go ahead and concede that point to you, then I need for you, if I'm going to throw out Penny Arcade in this average and means thing we're going to do, then you need to throw out Jim Davis and Gary Larson and Scott Adams, because those are...
I'm willing to do that. Yeah, throw them away. Throw away,
okay.
You know, Lynn
and then
Johnson,
we need to...
all those people.
And then
well,
I need
no,
to...
A middling successful print cartoonist is currently a more successful model, even with print in crisis, than a middlingly successful web cartoonist.
And how long
of
do you
course.
Think that's going to stay?
I think that the web will continue to increase in revenue, but I think it's going to level off at a level that's going to, a lot of people are going to find very dismaying.
Because I can tell you, as somebody that's worked in a newspaper for the last 17 years, that I don't expect to retire from my newspaper. I can guarantee you that. I mean, I've been saying that newspapers have been dying since I walked into my first newsroom, but in the last 5 years, I've actually seen the decay.
But Brad, print does not mean newspaper.
Well, yeah, I'll grant you that, but I mean in terms of the kind of comic strip that I do, in terms of a daily comic strip in print, that is the definition of where I'm going to sell my work.
Yeah, but
so if we can all agree,
I mean, look, I see mutts on the fucking bookshelves all the time. That's a comic strip.
Mm-hmm. I guess my point is, if you can concede that what Ted is saying is so, which I don't necessarily buy into that, but how long do you think it's going to stay that way, given the state of newspapers as it is?
I think newspapers are going to bounce back, honestly. There was a really interesting article.
Hey, Ted, your lips to God's ears, because I love my job, but I could only hope that would be the case.
No, but seriously, did you guys see the New York Times Sunday Business article about IBM's mainframe business, which is booming? Everyone pronounced mainframes dead back in the mid-90s, and they had a really interesting line in this article about how TV was supposed to kill radio, TV was supposed to kill cinema, but, you know, radio is bigger than it ever was in the golden age of radio. And the thing that keeps old technologies going is if the new technology doesn't offer something important that the old technology did. And print does have certain conveniences and certain advantages over the web that will not be replaced. And so, therefore, there will be a market for print newspapers, I think, really forever. There really will be.
If I could add something in real quick about newspapers, obviously they're not going to be what they once were. But, you know, the people who just say that the future of everything is on the web and that all newspapers will die, I think that, you know, if tomorrow morning all subscribers to the New York Times cancel their subscription, they would shut the doors and go home. The newspaper would be out of business. But if every single person, the 13 million people that visit their website every day, for whatever reason, stopped coming to their website, they wouldn't go out of business. I mean, print still is.
Oh, sorry. I apologize for trimming off there. I was going to say, though, Scott, that I almost think, I would like to posit that the conversation is almost over with Ted's statement there, because I respect that thought, but I'm so diametrically opposed to it that I really don't even know how to respond to it.
Wait, hold on. As the de facto moderator of this, let me just say something, okay? I've only been on this planet for 37 years. So I only know 37 years worth of experience, and half of that I spent in fucking Des Moines. So let me just say that
You're basically like a 16-year-old.
I'm basically 16 and a half. Yeah. I don't want to discount any possibility. The world is too huge and wonderful and unique. I really appreciate Brad saying your lips to God's ears, because if Ted wants to believe that newspapers are going to bounce back, I would love for that to happen.
I think he's right, though, in some ways. I think there's going to be a lot more middle circulation alternative newspapers independently owned, and not so much of this, you know, USA Today bullshit, or, you know.
Free
urban dailies are going to be huge, I think.
Yeah.
Can I be
brutal? I think USA Today will be bigger than it is today. It's the mid-sized papers that are going to die, like the Akron Beacon Journal, things like that.
Okay. Well, I'll be brutal then. You guys go ahead and bank your career on that, because there's no way in heck that I'm going to do that for me.
It's not about banking your career
your career on it.
I don't think anyone's even suggesting to do that.
No. Well, this is the fundamental problem, though, is that you're arguing from a point that the syndication and the print sales are going to save you, which is Ted's crux.
That's not actually the case. I think there's going to be a bounce back. Predicting the future is pointless. It has nothing to do with anything. The point is that right here in the here and now, we all have rent and mortgages to pay for, and it's going to take a while if newspapers bounce back. It might be 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, maybe never. Who knows?
Well, then, right now, we
cartoonists have a problem. We are earning less and less.
Here's all I can do then, Ted. All I can do is wish you well and then go about my business, because I'm not going to convince you and you're not going to convince me.
Come on, guys. Listen, I think we were making really good progress here.
I don't really get what the argument is right now. I mean, Ted.
There is no argument
that,
here.
Okay, let's. Right.
The discussion is, how do we as cartoonists make money? Do we make it from internet web sales? Do we make it from print collections? Do we make it from syndicating into newspapers or magazines? Or selling
t-shirts?
And I want to know how I can do that, because I don't know where to make money off of internet ad sales, because I've got Project Wonderful ads and they make me jack shit. I just signed up with AdSack. It looks about as worthwhile as Project Wonderful.
Who's this again?
Who was it that said all of the above, by the way?
Yeah, who
I
was
did.
It?
Me.
Listen.
Who are you? Because you're absolutely, as far as I'm concerned, you're absolutely right.
What's your name?
This is Matt, of course.
Okay.
Hey, that's the thing. The answer is all of the above, and keep your ear to the ground for the next thing that's coming down the line.
Can I throw something out there also? Earlier there was the somebody we were talking about how there was the thought that what print cartoonists think is that web cartoonists shouldn't put their work on their website for free, and I don't think that's what anybody's saying. I think what print cartoonists think is that their caricature or whatever of web cartoonists is that web cartoonists say, well, you know, no one is going to make money like that anymore. Print should die. Like, you know, all those old ways to make money are obsolete. This is the new way, and that's the only way. I just want to say that I'm not saying that's my opinion. I'm just saying I think that's a feeling amongst people.
I'm embarrassed to say it, but there are people in webcomics that absolutely that is their position. And I don't subscribe to it.
Well, the thing about it is, I've done self syndication. You know, I my comic appears in a small number of daily newspapers and a handful of college newspapers, and I do a website where I run advertising, and I self publish books and all this other stuff. But in terms of that scope that I have personally been involved with, I make way more money from the website than I do from the print side. other than books, which is, you know, it kind of falls into technicality there. But in terms of the
that
daily...
Not just have, I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt, but couldn't that have a lot to do with just your audience? Not necessarily...
Did you develop the correct audience?
Did I develop the correct audience?
Your audience is incorrect.
You built it on
your
own.
I'm just saying your audience is familiar with you through the web, and so that's where you're going to be making a good chunk of your money. Somebody that
maybe that's
is familiar with, you know, Charles Schulz, he's going to be making most of his money off of.
Let me go back to that, because my strip does appear in newspapers and on the web simultaneously, and I get way more contact from my web readers than I do from my newspaper readers. I've cultivated comics. I cultivated audiences in both arenas, and I get way more action from the web readers than I do from the print readers.
But that's just because they're one step over from their email application.
Yeah, I mean, it's like I get more feedback.
It's not about. You know, it's not really.
But
about,
they're also one step
feedback.
Over from giving you $20.
That's right. I mean, I would just as soon cultivate those web readers, because they're a lot closer to me in all of those ways, including being able to buy what I would like to sell them.
And per reader, they're a lot more rent.
For the people not on the web. Hello.
What's up?
You know,
well,
hey, Brad.
I hear someone trying to talk.
Was that a ghost?
I think it's Tokyo Rose. Hey Brad, Brad, I think the key there is that you, not that you, that you're keeping your audience, that you're retaining your audience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they come into you, they read your strip, and they keep coming back. So it has nothing to do with, you know, what audience you're attracting. It's about maintaining that audience.
But my
and that's
my,
what every cartoonist has to do.
But my point is I can see. Through react, like when I put a little line underneath the strip that runs in the paper, you can buy this book this way. You know, the new book is coming out. You can place an order this way. And when I put a link on my website, I get a lot more play from my web readers than I do from my newspaper print readers. So it behooves me to cultivate that.
Well, soon we'll be able to click on newspapers, so that problem will be solved.
Then you'll sell a lot more newspapers.
Right. And you know, I mean, well, when newspapers pop up in hologram form in front of our eyes from the M&M device that we have, I mean, you know, you can put the hyperlink in and we'll say, wow, newspapers made a huge comeback. But, I mean, yeah, obviously you're going to get more, more clicks
The person who was asking earlier, look, all I care about is how do I make money? The first thing I want to say
that
is
me.
Wonderful opportunity for you to buy my book.
oh, now who's being a plugmeister?
No, that was a joke. That was a joke to attention. The bottom line of it, and I was discussing this with my wife earlier, is that we all have a limited number of hours in the day to spin all these plates that is going to add up to our living. So For the people that are spinning all the plates right now required to earn money by doing spot cartoon illustrations in magazines and other publications, when we offer them a whole different set of plates to spin on the web, which is cultivating an audience, you know, that means they've got to let their existing plates fall. And there's no way to do that without going for months without having any income. Concurrently, for those of us that are spinning all these plates online, to hear that someone is making a lot of money making some money in storyboards or making some money selling to print publications, it's daunting, because I don't know how to stop spinning the plates I've got now to spin those plates. But the issue at hand isn't who's got the better set of plates to spin. The issue at hand is that we shouldn't have to be spinning so many fucking plates to make a living. There's
but
a limited number of people on the planet that can draw these little fucking cartoons,
well, Scott,
and people seem to like them.
Scott, going back to a comment you made on the Daily Cartoonist thread, isn't this really about who has a bigger penis?
Well,
I mean, no, listen, I think, Scott,
sir, I will always lose.
Scott made a great point earlier, which is, you know, show me a better way to make money, and I will do it.
I don't have an ego about this. I in my early years, I chased syndication. And then realizing that, A, it was a lottery ticket, it was working to get a lottery ticket that may not even pay off, and then, B, that the guys that did pay off for paid off far less than they thought, I switched to the web. But if you tell me and show me a way that I can make money differently, I will do it. And I want to thank you is that in my experience thus far, the way that, for example, we have Pixel Guys, and maybe to a larger extent, Control Alt Delete or Penny Arcade or Akewood or Perry Bible Fellowship have done, so far seems to be paying off in the last 5 years for more people.
Perry Bible Fellowship, I don't know if they made that much money online, but regardless, I get your point.
No. But I want to distinguish this because this is important. It's not so much that I make money. I don't make any money on giving it online. It's in the print that I make my money when I print self-published Sheldon books. So it's for me. It's an overarching system of looking at the way the business is structured.
And here's something else that's important to point out is that when Dave is making his money, and a lot of us are doing this, we're self-publishing that book. In other words, Dave, when he prints a book, he gets it printed, he gets it shipped to his house, he's storing it, he's shipping it out. He's not sharing those profits with anybody. You know,
yeah.
When he's offering it to a newspaper, there's no syndicate involved in that either. Dave is making 100% of his money.
I think that's great and amazing. I think as long as he's getting paid from the newspapers, I don't know a cartoonist on the planet who would disagree. I think that...
So,
you know, there's not this as big as a divide as a lot of people think.
No, I don't think so. I think you're right, Matt. I think you're right.
Let me give you an example personally that happened to me. I print my cartoons in. I take my cartoons off the web, and every month I print them in books with image. So the comic strips that come out every month, that's the stuff you've seen on the web. And I used to do a whole separate 22 pages a month. PvP at the time that it started with Image was bi-monthly. It skipped a month. And Image said, we really wanted to come out every month to build an audience. And I said, I can't do it. There's just too much work. I can't do 30 strips online and do another 40 strips for the book. And they said, just reprint them. And I said, well, my audience that's buying it won't want to do that. And what I found was it was two different audiences, okay? There were people that read it online, and there were people that were discovering it for the first time in the comic book shops. So it was a business model that I hadn't considered, which was repackaging it. So now that's working well for me, and I'm looking at my sales of my collections, okay? I look at the number of sales of PvP books through the comic book shops, and I compare it to the number of book sales through my online stores. And my online sales are three times as much, and I keep all the profits. Okay? So, if I was a businessman looking at the numbers, I would realize, the first thing I would say is, my future is in online sales. That's where I need to put most money of expanding into my business next year. It's online, obviously. It's doing three times as well. Well, when I express that to publicly, I hear from I hear from retailers of comic book shops berating me, because if I sell my stuff directly to a customer, then I'm bypassing them, and I'm screwing them up, and I'm ruining their business. And they're making me beholden now to their business succeeding. That's what's holding the entire comic book industry back.
Mm-hmm.
Is that everyone has got this retarded Go Comics attitude of keeping retailers alive when most of them are not surviving because they're running stores that look like a pedophile's basement.
Yeah, seriously.
Stay out of my basement. So what I'm saying is that what I'm saying there's a difference of terms and we're missing the point is that when I hear someone say, well, you know, you've got to do this and this and this, or cartooning is going to die. I hear a retailer telling me, don't sell your book at a convention before I have it in my store, because you screw me over.
Well, he can take the premium.
Yeah, and my response is, tough shit. I mean, this is where I make a lot of money. What do you expect me to do?
Right, right. And listen, I'm realizing now as you say that, Scott, because you phrase it differently, that when I said that cartoonists need to become more entrepreneurial, One of the reasons why I think that might have offended Ted is that I think actually in his career he has been very entrepreneurial, especially in the early years. But like in that Daily Cartoonist thread, literally there was five or six guys that just said, I just want to get paid to draw. And that's not going to happen for the most part. That's what I was trying to get at in terms of entrepreneurial.
No, I meant entrepreneurial in the sense of like a Walt Disney, where Walt was always looking to the future. What could he do next? And he changed an industry.
Mm. Right. And let's not forget the history of cartooning here. I mean, Harriman, for the most part, worked his ass off 20 hours a day trying five different ways, whether it be animation, whether it be, you know, Gertie the Dinosaur, whether it be,
McKay.
Crazy Cat, or excuse me, McKay. McKay was working nine different ways to Sunday. He was doing stage shows, for God's sakes, just to make a living. So it's not like the history of cartooning is this endless series of Mort Walkers making $40 million a year. Cartooning has these paradigm shifts where, quite frankly, people have to work their ass off in unexpected ways, and I think we're in that period right now.
Well, you know, Ted had an interesting point, and he's right. You know, with the advent of film, they said radio was going to die, and the same thing with television. But the truth is each one of these mediums has changed quite a bit. Radio is huge now, but you're not hearing radio dramas and serials anymore.
Right.
And I'm concerned that comic strips are going to be the newspaper, they're going to be the dramas and the radio serials of newspapers in the future.
Right.
Well, I was with you right up until the midpoint, and here's where I would take that. Radios, you know, there was a golden age of radios, and now radios have made the comeback. But where is the most significant, in my opinion, action with radios? It's on satellite radio, which is a completely new technology. And I would argue that radio has been saved by new technology, which I think is going to happen with comics.
Well, you're talking about the XM satellites?
XM, Sirius, that
sort
of thing.
But radio had a huge comeback with the advent of talk radio. It really saved the whole medium at that point.
Absolutely, but today you're seeing these satellite radios being built right into the cars now. I think radio is going to reach its next level, if you will, from new technology. And I think adapting and using that new technology to your strength is I think that's going to save us all.
And Brad though I love you like a brother, but I think he's right though in the sense that radio had to become something different. And I think one of the reasons why I chuckled when Ted said newspapers are going to come back is the fundamental word of newspaper is new. It's the word news comes from the idea of what is new. And the fundamental function of a newspaper is to bring you the news as fast as it can. And when it does it a day late versus the internet, the fundamental function of a newspaper is failing right now.
Right.
Because there is a faster means of transmission. So the newspaper is going to have to become something very different, which is a magazine weekly summation. So I have no problem saying that magazines will survive,
but
the newspaper.
You know, I gotta say, I was really disappointed to hear everybody laugh in Ted's face about that, because I just think it's hubris to assume that we can predict. I mean, listen, it might be just as much hubris for him to say I think newspapers are gonna bounce back, but there was a big meme going around the internet recently where they brought up some poor bastard's article from the 80s or 90s about how the internet was going nowhere. Now that guy gets to be a laughingstock. And
I don't think anyone was laughing in his face, but you've got to admit that it's pretty at this point, at least to me, it's pretty outlandish to think of newspapers coming back. I mean, that truly would be a resurrection.
Well, if they do,
it'll be a different format, but you'll still have organizations disseminating the news. The technology is there to have the New York Times staff, and so they, you know, they regear it towards doing a website, or they have a full-page, full-color magazine, because
that's already happening
all of a sudden in 2015. I
know you guys have probably heard this all your lives too. Newspapers have been trying for so long, newspaper editors, to get rid of comics. This could very well be the excuse that they need to get rid of comics, because they're not going to run them online. They're not going to pay for them to have there.
Of comics? I think, you know, if you had, Joe Sacco gets published in Time magazine. Maybe we just need more people to do work like Joe Sacco.
I'm just talking generally, like the nation's newspapers that have traditionally run comic strips.
Right. What you're saying is absolutely right. When I was finding out about this debate that was going on, that was the first thing that went through my head, is why are you guys arguing so hard to defend newspapers? And again, as a daily comic strip guy, my idea of print is newspapers. The thought went through my head, why fight so hard for newspapers? Newspapers have shown nothing but disdain for the cartoonist for the past several decades. I mean, I can't think of a single newspaper in America that has an actual comics editor. It's most likely a features editor who has been given this responsibility on top of everything else he or she is doing. And then how do they make their decisions? They leave it up to readers' polls and stuff like that. And as soon as a comic causes some kind of reader feedback, the newspaper is so scared to lose the precious subscriber that the comic gets deep sixed, and the contempt goes on and on and on.
That's right.
Well, guys, I really wish that Rich Stevens would come in here maybe and talk maybe next
time. I am.
Oh, you are, Rich.
I've been fucking trying to talk.
Hi, Rich. Okay. I want to talk to you about it, Rich, because here's the thing. Rich, to me, represents an interesting experiment, and to the most part, because I think
I was an interesting experiment to my parents too.
I think Ted was instrumental in making this happen, but I don't think anybody knows how well a comics page could do from 1980 to 2007, because we're still running for the most part. The comics pages from the 70s and
mm-hmm.
before.
Yep.
And so here comes Rich with a comic strip most definitely not from the 70s or the 80s. It's not the fourth art team put on Blondie. And I'd really like to hear about his experiences with it because, I mean, I think he must feel like the odd man out, surrounded by all those strips that are, that have been around since before he was born.
To be honest with you, all the cartoonists I've met have been wonderful, and all the editors I've met have been wonderful. I don't feel like the odd man out in that regard. It's frustrating to hear people who don't have to hustle and make their own money complaining that they can't make their money the same way that they used to, and then that's what's pissing me off here.
How do you mean?
Well, I mean, like, it just seems like such a luxury to be only a cartoonist as opposed to embracing all these other cool ways to adapt, and I mean, I don't know. I was perfectly happy to be quiet until you guys started talking about my ethical responsibility to older cartoonists who are already millionaires. You know what I mean? Like, is it their ethical responsibility to give me an extra 20 newspaper slots?
I mean, I
say figure it out or do something else because I have a day job called my website. And, I don't even know if that's answering the question, but I finally got.
No, look, I think you make a good point. The thing is that I can't allow myself. I have too much to do. I can't allow myself to worry about how necessarily a retailer is going to make money. If right now the thing is not working, I'm happy to partner with a retailer and let's make a shit ton of money together. But that's not how they want to play, and so I have to play a different way to make a living. And when it's working, they're getting mad at me, and that's just not going to fly for me.
Right, well, and they're whiners, and you shouldn't be dealing with that. You should go forward and stick with the people that are smart. You know.
But what I'm saying is, if I could find a retailer that would work with me, then maybe we could have the best of both worlds. And so, I don't want to hear anyone tell me that I need to make sure that. And the thing, I know Ted said a lot that cartoonists need to charge more money for what they're doing. I don't know how much there is how much of an opportunity there is for most of us on the web to assist in that, because we just don't spend a lot of time offering our cartoons for money.
It's not the world we walk in.
And we're also the fringe, guys. You got to keep in mind, we are so far on the fringe, it's not even funny. And I kind of wish this had never come up, because I feel like we're spilling beans.
Like, I mean, I want to just back it up for a second, and I don't even know if Ted is still here, but, I mean, you got to keep, as much as he doesn't quite agree with all of us, I mean, God bless him, he did give me a cool shot, which, you know, still may work out, but I don't know, personally, I kind of wish we would keep this to ourselves. You know, like,
and that's why I would disagree with you, Rich. But you know,
we're willing to do. It's just that we're willing to do all this work, and we're willing to do all this research and learn and all this stuff. And I think we should not give it. You know, speaking of not giving it away, let's not give away our whole scheme here.
Well, Rich, they don't seem to be biting.
I personally think that I can respect you saying that, but I don't think it's a zero sum game in that sense. And here's
it's
why.
I don't like to try to convince people. It's like you can either come and join this direction, or why should I have to convince you?
But Rich, here's where you might be missing things. If you think that most people are listening to Ted and thinking that that's where the money is going, you're wrong. You would not believe the amount of emails that I've gotten in my inbox the past 3 days from NCS guys, from people overseas working in the European newspaper market, from people in the U.S. that are in college and trying to break into the business.
Well,
most people are very receptive to the business model we have. And here's the deal. I'm not threatened by that because you look at it from a money economy, an attention economy, or a respect economy, there are so many hundreds of millions of English-speaking readers around the world that we can tap into that there is plenty to go around.
Right.
Because we all have niche audiences.
Okay, but hang on 1 second. I don't mean it's a threat. I mean, like, let's just the people who don't agree with us, let's let them just go hang out in their little barn and you know, not argue about that. No,
listen, I agree with you on that. Here's my attitude. The smart ones will listen and the dumb ones won't. The people that want to hold to the dream that you can have the same career that Mort Walker had or Charles Schulz had won't listen, and that's fine. They don't have to listen.
Cool.
But I do think that a lot of people don't even know, and that's the thing, Rich. They don't even know how we're doing it, and that's what I'm trying to change.
Okay, cool, because the only thing I didn't agree with there is that I don't think it's our responsibility to evangelize. I think it's our responsibility to talk to open-minded people, that's all.
No, brother, I 100% agree with you. But here's what I think. I think most people don't even know. That's the thing. It's not a matter of evangelizing. I'm not some Scientologist out here trying to get you to switch sides. I'm just saying, most people don't even have the presentation of the facts. They don't, literally, Ted can't even bring himself to admit that just like Buster Brown made money off licensing, Penny Arcade makes money off licensing.
Right,
you know?
And not only that, but I do a lot of, like, I do this volunteer thing with allexperts.com, okay? And people write in questions about cartooning, and I answer them. Do you know how many times a month I answer questions about, I want to become a full-time cartoonist, how do I submit to the syndicates? And I've got to, yet again, it's a copy and paste function at this point where I say, well, you can submit to the syndicates and here's how you do that. But have you ever heard about this thing called a webcomic? And I get to be the one that introduces them this whole new thing that says you don't even need the syndicates to tell you yes or no.
Seduction of the innocent.
Yeah.
Right. Well, and the beautiful thing is that's actually probably your best way to submit to the syndicates. I know about 3 or 4 of us who have only gotten in because we were web strips.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, I would have never mailed in I don't believe in playing the lottery. I would have never even submitted.
Okay.
You know,
I don't know.
Oh,
I'm sorry. Go ahead. I've got a question I'm dying to ask, and I don't know whether I should. So you go ahead. I'll get my courage up.
I just had a minor question. I just wanted to know, who are the syndicates, like, for various kinds of strips? Because I don't do a gag strip. I'm Gordon. I do multiplex. It's not something that would ever go in a newspaper. The format isn't right. It just could not work. But what kind of syndicates or what syndicates go to, like, the alternative weeklies or
is there one? Aren't most of those?
Is there one? I mean,
a lot of those guys are self syndicated, to my knowledge.
Yeah. You're probably better off sending out packages to newspapers and then going on your own there.
For the alternative weeklies, I think it's mostly people sending their stuff in by themselves because there is no syndicate pitching to them.
Yeah.
You have to understand that the syndicates – I talked to someone at the syndicates about PvP, and it was right before I offered it for free. And basically the hanging point was they didn't think it would work well on the paper without having to change it substantially. I told them they could edit the fuck out of it. I didn't care because it was worth it to me to get it in. But they didn't think it was family-friendly enough. And then on top of it, I told them I didn't really want to share any of my existing revenue streams with them. Like, I wasn't just going to start giving them a cut of my book sales and T-shirt sales and all of that now because they were distributing me to papers. I'd already established
that
book channels.
Yeah, they charge for that separately.
Yeah, so what at the time he's, you know, and this might have just been a polite thing, but he said that they view a partnership with a cartoonist as a partnership, and a property without any ancillary business opportunities attached to it is not something they're not a distribution service to newspapers. They're interested in building up a property, and
that sounds a lot like giving it away for free.
Yeah. Well, so, and then my follow up to that was to offer it to newspapers for free, and to just as a way to calm maybe the nerves of a lot of the print cartoonists who are appalled at that. It was amazingly difficult, if not impossible, to give it away for free. Nobody wanted it for free.
Well, that's
all
a deeper.
Pay for it.
That's a deeper issue, Scott. I don't remember whether I had this conversation with you or not, but it's a deeper thing. They were not going to do business with you because newspaper editors do business with syndicates, not with individual guys that send in their comics.
For the most part.
I mean, there are some self-syndicated guys. Trust me, I've been doing that for a while. But I also know the mindset of a newspaper editor very well, and they are, by and large, they do business with syndicates. They don't do business with an individual guy. That had no bearing on the quality of your strip,
no,
Scott.
I understand that, Brad, but you're misunderstanding me. Getting past the people that didn't want to pick me up because I wasn't with the syndicate. The people who were picking me up, I got into about four or five papers for a little bit, and most of them were because someone that knows an editor there or knew someone in charge or who was in charge happened to be a fan and saw that I was offering it. What I'm telling you is the people that did want it, despite the fact that I wasn't with the syndicate, did not want to take it for free.
Oh, okay.
They wanted
I see your point.
To pay me for it. In fact, I think some of them even told me that they would get in trouble by not paying me for it.
Mm.
So
it sounds like people using their budget at the end of the year so their department doesn't get less money.
Right. So what I'm saying is that for the people who were interested in my comic, they didn't want it for free.
Mm-hmm.
They needed to pay for it.
Well, an invoice is a paper trail, so they can't get sued. I mean,
that's an excellent point.
Even just charging, paying you a penny would take care of that, though. You know.
So here's the question that I'm that backing up to the first thing Scott went to, and Rich, you don't have to answer this question.
I will if it's fair. So
but this
ahead.
Is this is the question I'm dying to ask, and I'm going to be just enough of a jerk to ask it. I've said a couple times just to my wife and close friends, I don't think I would take a syndicate contract right now if it was offered to me because I think they would ask me to give up way too many things the same way that they seem to be asking Scott to give up way too many things. Did you find that not to be a problem?
I found that I made it very clear from day one that I wasn't going to do anything if I didn't get to keep the rights that I needed to keep my business going. And I mean, I lucked out. My lawyer was very good and they were very much in the market for somebody they could get in at the moment. And I didn't give up the rights that I wanted. I don't know if that answers your question. I mean, they have some rights, but I mean, I kept the rights to sell my own stuff and to sell merchandise and
mm-hmm.
to continue to make my own living because I told them flat out that why would I give up an income stream for
right.
a possible income stream? So, I mean, they're being, I mean, good. I mean, I think United is a good syndicate. They were flexible and I appreciate that. And that's the only reason I've been able to do this is because I've managed to continue to do all the extra work that I do to pay the bills.
Mm-hmm.
without, Brett, I think, and I think
had they said no to that, we wouldn't be having this conversation. I would be still doing my T-shirts.
And Brett, if you could get paid by a syndicate to reprint your strips in a newspaper and retain all your rights, wouldn't you do it?
Yes, but my idea has always been. I'm getting an echo there. My assumption has always been that they would ask me to give up too many rights.
The major rights that they have that I don't right now are to reprint the books.
Oh, they've got the right to do the books?
Well, I can do limited amounts of self-publishing myself, but we have to talk about it before I do it, just so we don't use the marketplace. But I gave that away because I wasn't making any money off books. You know? I don't have a really booky readership. I can't milk that as much. So I mean, I said God bless if they think they can do a good job of it. Please, that would be great.
Right, and obviously you get a royalty, so it's not like you're losing.
Right. I just we just compromised, and they were very good about that, actually. But I mean, at the same time, too, I wasn't going to sign if I couldn't also keep my website up and running.
Right.
You know, and that was actually a little harder to get out of them, but we did, and we both have websites. I'm hoping I'm answering your question straight.
No, that's the question I wanted to have. That's exactly what I wanted to know.
Yeah, but I mean, I also keep in mind, you know, I may have just been lucky. I may have been in a good situation, you know, or I may have been dealing with a particularly good syndicate. I don't know, but they did compromise in a way that I thought was acceptable. I wish there was more money, but you know what? I also wish I had my own space program.
Really? You really want the headache of that?
Oh, I wouldn't use it for good purposes.
But Rich, here's the question: how would you monetize that space program?
I would go to that. Was it the moon of Saturn that has all the hydrocarbons on it?
I'm kidding.
I would invade that moon.
But I think what's really instructive for a lot of people is that two web cartoonists could not have structured their businesses in as different a way as Rich and I, and we're both. But the bottom line is both of us are ultimately the determinant of whether or not we're succeeding in our in our cartooning career.
You know, what's weird though is I think the important attitude difference between us and some of the people complaining too are, I'm reading your tips and I'm going to incorporate them. I'm not going to, you know, whine about how people should buy more T-shirts. I'm
right,
gonna
right.
Save things.
And one of the reasons why
you're doing better than me.
One of the reasons why I'm willing to give those tips to other cartoonists is not just the spirit of goodwill, but it's the spirit of good business. Because I know somewhere down the line, there will be a cartoonist that will say, Dave, you saved my career by the tip XYZ. I want to give you this tip. I know for a fact that will happen. It's happened already with Scott and with Brad and with Chris.
Absolutely.
And with you, Rich. And so that because this is not a zero-sum game anymore, because we're not competing for 20 slots on the same newspaper page, I have no problem giving away everything I know about my business.
Absolutely, because if I'm not willing to do the work to make it, what good is the information?
Yeah, it's not going to help you anyway. So, but Matt or Eric, if you're still on board, I'd like to hear your thoughts on how are you planning to continue your business in the near and future.
Are they?
I think we lost most of the print guys.
Oh, well, they love you.
Chris is on though. Back.
Yeah, I listened to most of it.
Who's Chris?
I had nothing to add.
Well, don't you guys really feel that it's a misunderstanding of terms? Like, I think I understand Ted's point he's trying to make now. I don't understand why it's germane, but I understand the point.
Well, listen, I understand Ted when he said, like, the highest earners in comics cannot be matched in web comics. There's no arguing that. Because, I mean, none of us are going to make what Schultz made. The bottom line, though, for that is that took 70 years of a business model building in American newspapers for that to even exist.
Well, and
so,
not to mention the fact that there are probably 50 times as many people making decent livings. They just may not be gigantic livings, if, you know,
right,
normal.
Right.
go ahead, Brett.
There's a lot that Ted said that can't be boiled down just to definitions. He's making it sound like cartoonists are walking around as millionaires, and let's face it, we know that's not the case.
Brad, it is. Come on.
I mean, a couple of them are, sure.
I cannot tell you who they are. They're all living on a magma island.
Oh, you almost had me go. My blood pressure was raising as you were talking. I'm like, you can't feel this way. There's a lot of stuff that he said, you guys, that just can't be boiled away as a difference of terminology. And he's, in my opinion, the way I see the world, he's patently wrong about a lot of this stuff. That pains me because I think he's a brilliant cartoonist, but I think he's way wrong on some of that. And it can't be just argued away as a difference in terms.
Brad, I agree with you 100%.
And Brad or Rich, here's the question to ask yourself, though. Are you fundamentally worried about the future of your business? Because I'm not, but I have a feeling a lot of the print guys are fundamentally worried about their business.
I'm fundamentally worried about my own.
What you said, Dave.
I mean, I worry about myself every day, but not about the internet going away.
Well, and that's the thing with Scott. And Scott, because I want to address this point, I recognize and understand and sympathize and are completely on board with you saying we've got to prepare for when we're 50 or 60. Because let me tell you, there's no one that agrees with you more on the importance of planning and saving for retirement and the painful years in cartooning. But I think in the next 20 years, I have no problem saying my business model is going to grow like wildfire. And I'm not worried at all.
And not only that, but I swear to God, I was just talking to Carolyn about this over breakfast this morning, and I said, you know, I was going through a bunch of stuff that was going on, working out the print run for the next book, working out a convention appearance, doing this, doing that. Today's the day that I inked the strip, the entire week worth of strip, and I was a little bit behind on that, and bop, 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 and I turned to her, and I looked at it, and the good and the bad, there was some stuff that was really vexing me. And I said, and I'll tell you the truth, I've never felt more alive.
Yeah.
You know, because this is what I wanted to do ever since I was 8 years old. And I'm doing it, and I've never felt more alive. And even the bad stuff, I forgot to ask for a day off on one of the times that I'm having a convention and I can't get out of working that night, so I have to leave early. And it's just got my teeth on edge. But at the same time, it's this whole new challenge of how am I going to work this out now and get the best out of everything, and it's great to be alive. You know, this is what I always wanted. This is what I signed up for.
Can you guys tell me what it is that you're doing so that you're not afraid of your?
Hey Scott,
I can answer that before. Well, I'll let Rich go first. Rich, you go first.
I have a one-liner for you. The fact that you are worried about building a business model that will last until you're retired, and you're talking to people about it, means you probably will make it work.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, that's actually very true. Yeah, yeah.
I got to tell you that I get terrified all the time about it.
Welcome to the team.
Yeah. Well, not only that, but Scott, you are putting a little bit of money away, like in an IRA and stuff like that, aren't you?
You know, you'd have to talk to my wife about that. She tells me all about it.
You should have a SEP IRA, Scott.
I should do that.
Well, listen, I want to tell you that there's a possibility that I do. My wife shows me this thing all the time. I'm going to go home tonight from the office and say, do we have a SEP IRA?
But my point, or some kind of IRA or some kind of 401k or something that you're putting your money into that you can count on that you can say to yourself, okay, I'm paying myself first, you know, and then going on from there. But here's my
Canadian
other
bills.
I beg your pardon?
Even just a pile of Canadian dollars, just in case.
And some euros.
Yeah, but the other thing is that I among this group, I'm probably one of the few guys that also has a day job. Because I think you guys are all pretty much full time, and
I have a day job.
Okay. Well, then you back me up on this. I'm just as frightened about my day job being there in 10 years. I'm just as frightened about the pension plan and the 401k that I've got through my day job. I don't feel any more secure in my day job than I do in my cartooning business that I'm building.
Well, I'm a freelancer for my day job for print production and graphic design or whatever. So. it like I don't know where my job's going to be in two
but
months.
I guess my point is that as what Scott is saying, you know, how can you not be scared to death about the future as a web cartoonist or and my point is I'm scared to death as about the future, and I've got a solid job.
You have two jobs.
Yeah. And I'm still scared to death. So it doesn't change, you know. You're not going to shuffle up. If you could turn off that thing inside of your body that makes you need to do this and go and work in an insurance firm, you're still going to be scared to death of the future.
Right. The thing is, if Scott wasn't scared, he wouldn't have started a new comic. So it's probably good that you're scared.
Yeah, there's been many a business book that's been written that says only the terrorized survive in business, and I think that's very true. I think Rich hit it right on the head in terms of that you've got to be scared to stay smart in terms of your decision making. When you become complacent and think you're not going to fail, that's when you fail.
Then you're surprised.
Mm-hmm.
And Scott, unlike a lot of people in that thread, you are one of the few cartoonists that I have seen consistently. Even when you and I didn't know each other and you wouldn't know each other from Adam, I would see you reaching out to people that were diametrically opposed to you to say, how can I learn from you? And that's one of the hallmarks of a successful anything, is how can I learn even from people that are completely different from how I'm operating.
Yeah. I just don't feel comfortable dismissing one person, let alone an entire group. I mean, Dave, I'm going to confess something to you here, that for the longest time, I dismissed you and your work because you were the syndicated guy. And,
well, fair enough, yeah.
And that was...
And they dismissed you because you weren't.
and now I dismiss you because my wife finds you more funny than me, and I will punch you in the face for that one day.
You better watch out. Make sure she doesn't hang out with me, then.
But here's ultimately, Scott, why I'm not afraid of the future as compared to, say, a syndicate guy. One of the things, and Rich can talk to this, I won't put him on the spot about it, but one of the things that every syndicate guy completely and consistently complains about is...
I've hung in for a while now. It's become a really good discussion between us and the person who has a syndicated guy, who's also a web cartoonist.
Oh, Brad! Oh, gosh! Oh, gosh, I forgot to cover my microphone.
Oh,
anyway.
Gosh, I forgot to cover the microphone. I talked to my wife.
What's the sound?
Here's that. But I want to finish this point off, though, is that when you are ultimately responsible for your own success or failure in life, to complement what Rich was saying, is when you're fearful, you'll survive. But I would much rather be in the position I'm in than relying on three syndicate salesmen traveling around the United States to sell my strip. I'm responsible for my own success or failure. And that's a powerful thing in life. So few people have that. I mean, nobody in a corporate job has that. Nobody in syndication has that. And I have that. It's amazing.
Well, I'm in syndication, and I feel that way. I mean,
Well, you're responsible for the work you do, but you're not responsible for the sales you make, and that's the key difference.
I am responsible for some of them because my work is targeted a lot towards all weeklies, and the syndicate doesn't even try to make sales in that. I mean, that's my job. I make the packets. I spend my own money on them, and I send them out.
Well, I 100% applaud you for that, but then I would ask you, why are you with a syndicate?
because he doesn't want twice as much money.
Well, yeah. Well, if
what?
I get sales or the well hey. Of the
no,
sales.
No, if honest to God, if you're capable of making the things and making those sales, why stay with the syndicate?
Well, what I was going to say is that the idea of joining with the syndicate was to get in more daily papers, but because I was already in all weeklies myself, and they don't really usually buy from syndicates. I mean, you know, it's usually people that just market towards them, but they don't really have any kind of I don't know what the word would
mechanism.
Be infrastructure or whatever to you know, contact there, and they don't sell them. You know, they go to a daily paper and they sell them a bunch of different stuff, whereas an all weekly, you know, they're going to have maybe one cartoon opportunity there. So I mean I still am in charge of doing that, and since I only do three a week, I mean, I do a lot of other stuff, so I'm still in charge of you know, making sure I have most of my income too.
Well, then you're ahead of most, and that's cool.
Hey, listen,
yeah.
I'm gonna sign off here, but I don't want to interrupt the flow too much. If we're going to do the podcast tonight, give me a holler on my cell phone come on.
Buddy, I got news for you. This was the podcast.
Okay. Did we get the rights to record it?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Well, then I'm gonna take off, and it was great talking to you guys tonight.
Be good, man.
All right, see ya. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I love him.
Did we? I know. God damn it, Brad is so funny. Oh, Garth, I think they heard me talking to you, honey. We better keep it down.
Is Eddie still in here?
I am still here.
So what do you think?
I keep forgetting to talk because I just feel like I'm listening to the podcast, and I don't usually talk back at the radio or the internet when I'm listening.
I do.
I'm just absorbing it all because it's fascinating to me. I still see the wall there, and although I'm not, I'll be in New Orleans this year for the NCS convention. And this can be interesting to listen and hear, if some of this stuff is brought up.
Well, I got to tell you, that's the only thing Ted said that made me really upset was he said to come to the NCS. I got to tell you, I'm not welcome there.
I'd go if there was a way to make money.
Not only am I not welcome there, but I'm being told by people in the NCS not to bother with it, I would love to be there. Bill Amen tried to get it set up to where I could be there to give a talk on webcomics.
Well, why?
And Jeff Keane said no.
I don't know. I was looking for one too.
Why is it that you're not welcome there?
Well, I'll be real honest with you, because for the longest time I was the asshole saying, you guys have been to Dancoid, and I'm on the web, and I'm going to win, and you're going to lose. And then, every time Wiley Miller steps into a thread and says, something that only a crotchety fuck like Wiley Miller would say, which is like, I think that webcomic people are assholes who draw with fire, and I don't understand them, and, and says something inflammatory, I take the bait, and I scream, and so the people that I end up getting in fights with end up running the NCS. I got in fights with Rich Dermosky and...
Yeah, it's interesting, Scott, because I don't care what I say at this point because they don't know who I am. I'm just the guy that sits at the back table during the banquet. It seems to me to be a bit of a fear of this. Like it's something that they just don't understand. Obviously, we hear that from the things they say and the things they post. But I think they're just very afraid that they're gonna that web comics will overtake them in some way.
Maybe. I don't know. Really? Do you think it's that?
What? Well, I don't know what the syndicate guys think. I think my worry is just that I'm not going to be able to make a lot of money because, like I said earlier, I don't see too much of a future in print. I mean, there's a future, but it's not going to be. It's not going to be growing, and as far as web for people like me, at least not guys like you, but there's not a lot of outlets that pay either, so it's not the future. It kind of looks grim.
Well, let me tell you something. As not just as a cartoonist, but as a fan of comic strips, I'll be honest. I don't pick up the newspaper anymore to read the comic strips. I did when I was in college.
Yeah,
I'd pick up the paper to read. Calvin and Hobbes. I would drop money down for a newspaper just to read Calvin and Hobbes, but I don't do that anymore. And the only comics that I do read on a regular basis are comics that I find on the web, and they're not comics that are in print. There are a few there that I do enjoy, but for the most part, they don't inspire me like they once did.
But if they were in newspapers, would you read them there?
If there were inspiring comics in the newspaper for me, I would pick them up.
I would maintain to this day that I really think it's sad that I think the saddest part of the newspaper industry when it comes to comics and the syndicates is not that the industry's dying. I don't know that I'm smart enough to even examine that or make a statement about it. I just don't know the business well enough. But I do know the face of the comics page because I've studied that intensely for years. And there's nothing, there was nothing, there's nothing to inspire my generation anymore on the comics page. And now there's already a generation, probably two, beyond mine that are really not being inspired by the comics pages because...
Yeah, those are people who like Meredith.
They're still running the old comics pages. I mean, how many more years can we rerun Peanuts and you know,
right.
and Beetle Bailey and Dennis the Menace and,
oh.
and Hank.
Well, I know I'm not going to be popular for saying this, but, you know, as far as the legacy comics go, I think the place for them is on the web, you know? Put them on the web and let's make some space in the newspaper for new artists and new blood. Bill Waterston said that, but he could get away with it because he was popular.
I don't know anyone that would disagree with that. I mean, I think every cartoonist wants the legacy strips out. That's not.
Well, I think there are a lot of people who would disagree with it, and you know, those would be all those people who are drawing those legacy strips right now.
Well,
and all
the
syndicate people making money off of all the legacy strips.
Yeah, yeah.
And I, you know who else would disagree with it are the newspaper editors because they don't have to worry about getting letters about the legacy strips.
Yeah.
But they're going to get a letter about Rich's strip.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Well, yeah, I think newspapers really dropped the ball with, you know, some time ago updating their strips.
Yeah.
But, I've talked to some people about it, about why they think that is, and the word I was getting from, God, what are their names? Michael Jantz from The Norm, and then the guy that Sherman Lagoon and J.P. Toomey. They were telling me, they were kind of educating me that back in the day, newspaper editors bought comic strips because they helped their papers be competitive.
Mm-hmm.
Because, if you had a new comic strip in your paper that the other paper of the city didn't get, then people would want to pick up your paper so they could read the cool new strip.
There were newspapers in the town.
Yeah, but that's not the case anymore. There aren't multiple papers in towns, and if they are, they're all owned by the same people.
Mm-hmm.
So now newspaper comics are bought based on relationships with editors, relationships with buyers and sellers at the syndicates. Like, for example, an editor would say, well, John over at so-and-so is a really nice guy, and I haven't bought a strip from him in a while, so the next strip I buy is going to have to be from him because, you know, I got to keep a good relationship with him, and he's going to be in town. And so that's the merits by which people are buying strips. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's actually super true. This is Rich, because I could tell you that a good sales guy makes all the difference with papers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would agree.
One of the guys at our company is stellar compared to you can look at his route and you can see what gets picked up faster. That's absolutely true.
I think I know who you're talking about, Rich.
What's that?
I said I think I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, is he a really, really smooth dude from California?
Yeah.
And I kind of love
I don't know. I don't know what to say about that. I think that was
probably always the case, though, with sales guys, right?
Well, what I'm saying is that might be the case. What I'm saying now that the problem is that the editors, the impetus for editors buying comics is not because they care. Or
right.
They're objectively looking at the art or the...
It's out of a sense of duty.
I don't know.
Yeah, it's out of a sense of, you know, I got to do this and I got to get this done, or because they're going to, like, for example, if...
I'm not sure about that.
If good Hollywood guy is going to make good sales, it doesn't matter if the strips are good or not. It just matters if he's good or not.
Mm-hmm.
The editor doesn't give a shit what the strip is.
I think more editors care than you think, but they... The people who employ the editors are the ones who make the editors scared.
Ooh, well, I super want to hear that. That's good news.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I've gotten a lot of contact from editors who really do care. And
that's
the biggest problem is the screaming email. and the screaming letters and phone calls about change. It's not the, I don't think it's that the editors don't care. I think that it's that, you know, the fanboys who don't want Spider-Man to change?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They're also 70-year-olds who feel that way about Dagwood, and that's who controls the business.
Yeah.
That's just reality, just like it controls the comic book business.
Yeah. Well, at this point, have we left any stones unturned? Should we end it?
I'd like to just put it out there that I'd love to talk to you guys more often as far as podcasts and whatnot go. I think that would be very helpful for me, at least.
Well, we'd love to talk to you more often, too, I think.
Yeah.
Did we lose Dave?
We lost a lot of people.
At this point, it's just me and my mom.
The only reason I'm still on is because Meredith and I are both on in the same room, and she doesn't want me to get off the phone until we're done.
Well, I'm drawing as I talk, so.
I've been marketing as we talk.
anybody on in San Francisco?
No.
Okay.
Hey Scott, thanks for putting this together. I think this was a good opportunity to get everybody to air out some opinions and hopefully it'll be helpful.
Well, I hope so too, and hopefully we can maybe we can do it again. I just I don't know. Now I'm starting to feel exhausted in the head about it the way I think Dave was earlier. I wish we had spent more time working out how we could all improve things, but I don't know.
Well,
maybe there's not as much to learn from print people as I thought.
Oh, there he goes.
Maybe the web is the future. Maybe I've been wrong.
Should I end it on that? It's exactly 9/11. You should end it on a very arrogant note.
Okay. All right, well, I'm going to stop recording, but that doesn't mean that we have to stop talking, because I'd like to talk to Eddie just a little bit more and Rich a little bit more.
Okay.
Hold on. Meredith? Did I do it right?